Chapter 6. Two Men in Straw Hats. When Bond left the bar, he walked purposefully along the pavement, flanking the tree-lined boulevard, towards his hotel a few hundred yards away. He was hungry. The day was still beautiful, but by now the sun was very hot, and the plane trees, spaced about 20 feet apart on the grass verge between the pavement and the broad tarmac, gave a cool shade. There were few people abroad, and the two men standing quietly under a tree on the opposite side of the boulevard looked out of place. Bond noticed them when he was still 100 yards away, and when the same distance separated them from the ornamental porte cochère of the Splendide. There was something rather disquieting about their appearance. They were both small, and they were dressed alike in dark and, Bond reflected, rather hot-looking suits. They had the appearance of a variety turn waiting for a bus on the way to the theatre. Each wore a straw hat with a thick black ribbon as a concession, perhaps, to the holiday atmosphere of the resort, and the brims of these, and the shadow from the tree under which they stood, obscured their faces. Incongruously, each dark, squat little figure was illuminated by a touch of bright colour. They were both carrying square camera cases slung from the shoulder. And one case was bright red, and the other case bright blue. By the time Bond had taken in these details, he had come to within 50 yards of the two men. He was reflecting on the ranges of various types of weapon, and the possibilities of cover, when an extraordinary and terrible scene was enacted. Red Man seemed to give a short nod to Blue Man. With a quick movement, Blue Man unslung his blue camera case. Blue Man, and Bond could not see exactly as the trunk of a plane tree beside him just then intervened to obscure his vision, bent forward and seemed to fiddle with the case. Then, with a blinding flash of white light, there was the ear-splitting crack of a monstrous explosion, and Bond, despite the protection of the tree trunk, was slammed down to the pavement by a bolt of hot air which dented his cheeks and stomach as if they had been made of paper. He lay, gazing up at the sun, while the air, or so it seemed to him, went on twanging with the explosion as if someone had hit the bass register of a piano with a sledgehammer. When, dazed and half-conscious, he raised himself on one knee, a ghastly rain of pieces of flesh and shreds of blood-soaked clothing fell on him and around him, mingled with branches and gravel. Then a shower of small twigs and leaves. From all sides came the sharp tinkle of falling glass. Above, in the sky, hung a mushroom of black smoke, which rose and dissolved as he drunkenly watched it. There was an obscene smell of high explosive, of burning wood, and of— yes, that was it, roast mutton. For 50 yards down the boulevard the trees were leafless and charred. Opposite, two of them had snapped off near the base and lay drunkenly across the road. Between them there was a still smoking crater. Of the two men in straw hats there remained absolutely nothing, but there were red traces on the road and on the pavements and against the trunks of the trees, and there were glittering shreds high up in the branches. Bond felt himself start to vomit. It was Mathis who got to him first, and by that time Bond was standing with his arm round the tree which had saved his life.